Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening of
another show. So three shows to discuss today, each one focused on a complex major character. The first is a lonely professor whose future is threatened when she gets a dire medical report. The next is a man going through the proverbial midlife crisis who manages to be cranky, creepy, and, wouldn't you know it, charismatic. Those are featured in original plays. The last one I saw with a woman's name in the title was created by a man many years ago. All three shows might be considered downers, but they also represent really fine writing, which for me is always an upper. So let's start with The Sound Inside, written by Adam Rapp, directed by David Cromer, and starring Mary Louise Parker, all strong draws for knowing theatergoers who are heading to Studio 54. Is this audience friendly? Parker's character wonders in her opening monologue. Well, we soon realize that she is writing her story as well as narrating it. This play is essentially about two people, a creative writing teacher and published author at Yale, and one of her students. Nicely played by Will Hockman, he announces up front that to be a really famous writer, which he aspires to be, you ultimately have to commit suicide. That being said, they begin spending time together beyond the usual after-class hours. He doesn't answer. I'm starting to get the feeling he just wants to hang out, she says. These are two loners. I guess at some point I just stopped liking people, one says. They connect and finally ask some very difficult things of one another. Believe it or not, there is humor here. Mary Louise Parker, taking us through a recent sexual experience, is downright hilarious. This is one of her finest performances. Even though it's a long way off, she may be honored once again with the Tony Award. Though she could be running against herself, it turns out, as Parker returns in the spring in a revival of How I Learned to Drive. Now, she performed in that Paula Vogel piece decades ago off-Broadway, and now it's going to be moved on. Now, interesting also, that one is a two-hander. I am usually not a fan of those, but the tension in The Sound Inside never wavers. And while inevitability is an oft-used word in the play, the story, in fact, surprises. This is a literary work in that it appreciates those who write and those who read. The outside voices become more understandable and ultimately help us understand the sounds inside, these two initially very different people. Now, next up for me was Linda Vista, written by the obscenely talented Tracy Letts. Great actor, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright. Linda Vista is in an unusually short run at the Helen Hayes Theater. It's a seven-character piece about a 50-year-old man who is described as broke, joyless, past his prime. He's getting divorced and moving into a Southern California community called Linda Vista. Wheeler, as he's called, once dreamed of being a serious photographer. Well, now he's working in a small shop. I'm a camera repairman, he says. I'm never busy. He seems to have no relationship with an only child, socially spends most of his time with one couple, and even though, as one character says, he looks like a turtle who doesn't know he's lost his shell, Wheeler seems to have little trouble finding romantic conquests. There are at least two in this show. He is, I think it's fair to say, a rather old-fashioned chauvinist, though he does occasionally acknowledge the times have changed. Nothing good has ever been new, he opines. Self-pitying, yes, sometimes self-aware. He's perfectly portrayed by Ian Barford, who actually resembles the playwright. Linda Vista is a tough play at times, and I think it's fair to say men appreciate it more than women, but primarily it qualifies as a dark comedy, and there are a lot of very funny lines. Though I think the only one that elicited applause was when Wheeler says of Trump voters, "You cannot be friends with those people." Now, you should be warned, there is a good deal of profanity here, and by the way, full nudity in several scenes. The play runs about 2.5 hours, but director Dexter Bullard keeps things moving nicely. The show comes to us from Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater, from where Tracy Letts emerged. I truly don't know how he manages to act in challenging roles, recently starring on Broadway in All My Sons, and keeping his own plays coming. Speaking of which, the next arrives in the spring, called The Minutes, which is about a political story about how local government works or doesn't. And I guess he should know, coming from Chicago. My last play of the week is Molly Sweeney, written by Irishman Brian Friel more than 20 years ago. Now, here we have three actors on stage who never interact with one another, but are the key characters in a very interesting and moving story. Molly Sweeney has been blind since she was an infant, but has managed to live a pleasant and self-sufficient life, married to a man named Frank, who always takes on lost causes, be they mammals in the sea, Iranian goats, or, in this case, his wife's blindness. The third character is the doctor hired to perform experimental surgery to try to give Molly sight, and, he says, a chance to restore my own reputation. Molly was raised by a loving father who taught her to touch, to feel, to sense, and assured her, "I promise you're not missing a lot." Her mother is only referred to as having had nervous troubles that kept her away from home. Now, I don't want to give more away except to say that the performances by Pamela Sabah, Paul O'Brien, and Tommy Schreider are all terrific, and the words of playwright Friel are memorable. She had an instinctive beauty for every occasion, is one I recall. And insightful words, one leaves wondering what it would be like to have to learn to see, especially when one has spent a lifetime learning not to see by studying things sequentially. The play, which, by the way, is produced by the Keene Company, now in its, 20 years, 30 years? I can't remember what they said, but it's at Theater Row off Broadway. Anyway, it makes a clear distinction between what Molly deals with physically and what she later faces psychologically. How much do I want this world, she ultimately must ask. The situation affects all three characters in painful and life-changing ways. The play runs a bit too long, 2 hours 20, but one certainly appreciates hearing such sentiments that last beyond the theater, and if you're like me, till your next look into the mirror. Finally, some Broadway news to report. Yet another movie-turned-theatrical musical is on the way, Mrs. Doubtfire. Remember that one with Robin Williams dressing up as a nanny so he can see his own children? Well, good luck with all the self-identifying questions this one may be tackling. Also coming, though likely not this season, are stage adaptations of The Devil Wears Prada and The Notebook. That trend obviously ain't going anywhere soon. And despite my predictions that it would never happen, it seems a musical about Michael Jackson is in our future, likely next summer. With the script by the highly talented Lynn Nottage and, of course, that great music, this one, it seems, aims to avoid the child molestation controversy by focusing only on a particular time in Jackson's career. Anyway, interesting stuff, Jill, and I think we can say that Broadway producers may never again see a movie without imagining it on a stage.
And way back when, didn't they? I'm going to say it was ever thus, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, probably, that's true.
I don't know. Back when I was just a long time ago, I just remember people looking at things going, oh, wow, we'll turn that into a... And some things have absolutely no right in my view, but they didn't stop them. I am struck that you mentioned the Michael Jackson thing because I was well behind in my newspaper catch up.
Yeah.
And there it was, July 6th, previews starting July 6th. And I thought, well, but then I also thought, given people's attention spans, et cetera, these days, and outrage.
That's a good point. It's probably far enough past that.
We're 6,700 outrages past that one for right now.
That's right.
And by the time that it rolls around, people are just going to be either onto something else or their outrage.
We'll have moved on, and
they'll say,
remember when those lights, the Jackson 5, remember that cute little guy, you know.
And remember that song. Because that was a really good song. And I'm sort of watching it just broadly in entertainment and even in TV adverts and so forth, because there's a real almost crusade to get people go. Almost everything has a dog in it.
Right.
And almost everything has a reason to take the dog outside. So good.
And, you know, people can take darker, even if they touch on some of the darker aspects or hint at some of that. You know, people seem willing to do that, even with the Temptation show now, Ain't Too Proud. There's a lot of darkness in that. There's that great Motown music, but, you know, one is suicidal, the other one is, you've got a, you know, extramarital. I mean, they all have problems. So, or issues, you know, that would be considered something. I mean, I think they might get away with this with Michael Jackson if it's great enough musical and if they hinted some of the darkness to come, maybe. Why not, you know, do you? You know, when they start doing a musical on Harvey Weinstein, then we can talk, you know.
It's called Finding, what musical was he involved in? Was it Finding Neverland?
Finding Neverland.
Right.
Which apparently he lied to in terms of getting the money for that. That was a whole scandal in itself. But anyway, so I think that you're right. The Michael Jackson thing might be far enough away. And sure, movies were always turning. You know, it seems like they used to be movie musicals that became theater musicals or theater.
There was cross-pollination, but the bigger thing is that there was a little, it always felt a little more joyful. You remember who was speaking of lying about the money or whatnot? What was his name? Garth Drabinsky?
Yeah, was that the name?
It was
had a lot of trouble.
Long, long time ago. Or Canadian, one or the other, I'm not positive.
Yes.
But the point being that there, for as long as there has been showbiz, and as long as there has been money, you know, there have been, shall we say, characters, some people who are more reliable than others.
Oh, sure. You know, in Hollywood, they call it creative financing. You know, how things are done. Go see the documentary on Roy Cohn called Where's My Roy Cohn and find out how Roy Cohn and Donald Trump built Trump Tower together. The whole thing is corrupt. I mean, there wasn't one aspect of it that wasn't corrupt.
And yet,
you know, there it is. And I don't know, maybe we're more accepting or we've gone numb, whatever. But God bless theater, you know, because it takes you out.
And it's still live?
It's still live. It takes you out. And when you hear beautiful words, frankly, as I did this last week, not perfect, but enough that I was scribbling constantly. You know, that's when I know that I've been privileged.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.